I'm not entirely sure what your name is, but you are a classic idiot. You think spending time with her, kissing her, having fun with her, you think that's what it was all about? That was love?
Yeah.
This is love, missing her because she's gone, wanting to die. You're so lucky. You're like a walking poem. Would you rather be some kind of a fantasy, some kind of a Disney ride? Is that what you want? Don't you see, this is the good part. This is what you've been digging for all this time. Now you finally have it in your hand, this sweet nugget of love. Sweet, sad love. And you want to throw it away. You've got it all wrong.
I thought this was the bad part.
No. The bad part is when you forget her. When you don't care about her, when you don't care about anything. The bad part is coming, so enjoy the heartbreak while you can, for God's sakes.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Homemade Broadcast, episode 86, Radio St. Pete, RadioSt.Pete.com. How the heck are you? Will Koontz, your host with the most. Yes, of course, that old chestnut. How you doing? Good? Good. I'm glad you're all right. I'm doing okay as well. Don't forget, the Homemade Broadcast is available on iTunes. Just search for the Homemade Broadcast. Get your HMBs on the go when you're at the gym, when you're, cleaning the kitchen. Just want some noise in the background. I can talk to you and soothe you with the sounds of my voice and my guest's voice that come on and talk to me. So make sure you do that. Also, of course, this broadcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Check out why Sly Bar was named one of I Love the Berg's top 15 businesses to watch in 2015. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/SlyBarSt. And they are located at 2061 Central Avenue. Great beer selection, good people all around. And also, now, a new sponsor, friends of ours, Angelo's Bar and Grill. Angelo's provided the pizza for us at our open mic. Really tasty stuff, so make sure you get down there at 536 First Avenue North. Pay them a visit, or at saintpizza.com, which is probably the best web page that I've ever been privy to. I'm very happy to know that Saint Pizza exists, and it just goes together, right? I mean, they go hand in hand. Saint Pete, of course, the city that we live in, pizza, boom, smash them together, Saint Pizza, and it's a religious monarch that will provide tender pizza kisses to all you boys and girls out there. I'm sorry, that was dumb. But, so yeah, they've been providing us with pizza, so thank you to them. And the next open mic is May 12th at Sly Bar. So get your pizza, get your Sly Bar on, support our sponsors that support us here at the Homemade Broadcast. Very much appreciated. And of course, you're listening on Radio St. Pete. Those that are listening in podcast form can catch this broadcast on RadioSt.Pete.com. Every Sunday at 6:15, those of you listening on Radio St. Pete already know that, however, so, they're ahead of the game, I guess. Today, my guest is returning to the program, Natasha Sam Rainey. I talked to her back, I think, just before the new year. I think it was like maybe October-ish, and she had just come to one of the open mics. A friend brought her along, and she is in Bradenton, I think, Bradenton or Sarasota, working down there on some of her stuff. So I'm excited to catch up with her and see what she's been working on, because she did the We're Still Here show, but I really haven't kept up with her probably as much as I should. So we'll get a chance to sit down and chat. So I guess we can just get into that now. So please welcome to the program Natasha Sam Rainey, and please hold while I go get the door for her. All right, Natasha, what's up?
Recording. Are we recording?
We're on. Yeah, we're okay. Recording. I just pushed the button.
Oh, okay.
Natasha just had some pizza, so she's a little bewildered. She's ready to nap now. She had her carbohydrate fix. She's ready to go.
Can you tell me what I'm not allowed to say on here? This mic is falling like a tit.
Oh, yeah. I don't really know what to do about that, unfortunately.
Okay. It's okay. You have so many nice technologies here.
I have things that like look nice, but unfortunately none of them work. So that thing just will fall right down. Yeah, I don't know what that's about. See this thing?
This mic needs some Viagra.
Yeah, it does. It's just drooping down there. This is embarrassing for both of us.
Lift it. We won't talk about it after today.
No, definitely not. This would stay.
I can do
us.
The whole 80s DJ thing. That's better. It's more for my vanity.
There you go. I like that better.
Does that work?
Yeah.
This is so much fun, Will. It's always fun. It's always fun with you.
Thank you. That's what I strive to be, is just somebody that can come in, play with all my equipment, and make fun of it, and then go home. That's
so much is happening in that statement.
So, Natasha, you did the We're Still Here show with us, I guess it was a couple weeks ago now.
It was last weekend, dude.
It was last weekend?
Yeah. Wasn't it? The 24th. Yeah.
Yes. So it was.
You're getting old fast.
Yeah. Time is kind of starting to do funny things for me now. I feel like I'm getting to the age where I'm living every day.
Mm-hmm.
That I can kind of, I guess, meaning that I remember, for example, January 1st. And I can kind of remember what I did leading up to this point here. It used to kind of be a blur where you would wait for things, you know, you would be excited. I guess I'm not excited about anything. That's what it is. Like, you look forward to something, like either getting your driver's license or summer vacation. Yeah. There's not really much to look forward to at 30 years old. You're kind of, you're in life at this point.
Like
now.
You've hit all your pegs and now you sort of have to find the things that are motivating you or driving you.
Yeah. I think it's just like, I know there's going to be cool stuff that happens, but I guess it's more, I'm not looking forward to anything. I don't have anything planned. Maybe if I had a vacation planned, you know what I mean? Like if I was going somewhere. I don't have anything. I don't have any money though, so I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, money drives everything.
It certainly does. So like I'm actually like living every day now, and I'm kind of, it's good and bad. I guess it's a good thing though, because I'll remember it and I'll be able to focus on those high points.
Yeah.
But then you also remember all those low points too.
Yeah. Everything is magnified, I guess, by choice even.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like a philosopher artist. Maybe I'm projecting. That's how I feel.
Well, good. No, I'm glad, because most of my friends are a few years younger. So they're like 26. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's when you kind of start to come into your own. Okay, I feel like a person now, you know, I have empathy and compassion and, you know, it's not all about me.
Yeah.
That's when you kind of start to go into that drive. And also, you start to get, that's usually when you get your job, you know, your career. I didn't do that, but that's when most people do that. All my friends are kicking ass doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I guess, that's kind of when you come into it. And then I think humans are kind of obsessed with like whole numbers. So that 30, I think, is maybe you're putting too much emphasis on it, but I feel like it is a different stage. Every decade, I feel like it is kind of a new stage. And I don't know if that ever stops. Like, I don't know if you could go 80 to 90 and be like, I feel different than I did when I was 80. But I would imagine you would, right? Because you've got 10 more years of if you make it that long.
I guess it really depends on how you live your life, right? I don't know. I feel like when you're a kid and when you're young, like you said, like every year, every couple of years, there's like a huge thing happening that you mark your life by. And then at least now that we're in that age of like 30s, it is starting to ramp up. And then I feel like once you're 80 or 90, maybe that's like the lower end or the, you know, the falling end of the parabola.
Yeah.
See, I did use my algebraic knowledge teacher.
I know what the parabola is, so I'm with you.
I had to check myself on the pronunciation in my brain before I said that.
Parabola?
The parabola.
Is that a
the
mushroom?
Ebola, the Ebola. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, man. Like I'm glad that you kind of feel the same way, because sometimes, I guess everybody kind of feels alone in these things, but it's a very, I haven't experienced anything like this, meaning, I don't know, if I put a lot of emphasis on the 30s, I don't think it's that important, but like I said, I feel like you do come to a new understanding or a new level, you know, in life. You beat your 20s, your 20s was learning how to be an adult, and now you're an adult, but you're a young adult.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot to learn, but you're there. I feel like you're there.
I no longer have to excuse myself, you know, in terms of, it's funny, like when I was in my mid to late 20s, like, you know, I'd finished grad school, I'd had my first job, and I thought I was on this arc to greatness. That didn't work, but I was on my way there. And whenever I would talk to someone who's like, oh, weren't you reporting or weren't you doing this? And then I would, you know, if I wasn't where I thought they assumed I would be, I would sort of explain away why.
Mm.
And now I don't, you know, I just talk about the things I'm excited about and listen more. Like you said, empathy, just collect and just meet. And like you sort of feel okay with that, maybe because it is one day at a time and no one knows what the hell is going on. Really?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. I feel like, you know, that old saying, the more I know, the more I don't know.
Yeah.
Or it goes, it's
the more I realize I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true. Like every time I come to an understanding, it just opens up more doors to other things that I don't know about that I have to explore. And, you know, whether it's relationships that you build, you know, new people, or just, I don't know, getting up in the morning. Every day is a new adventure. I start to, I'm starting to already feel my knees hurt, you know. It's just learning how to cope with your experience and what's around you, and figuring out how to, I guess for me, it's like figuring out what tools I have and how I can use those to better my situation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it is a game. I feel like life really is a game. And you have to use what you got.
Like, I feel like you have to create your own reasons. Like, I don't know. There's no reason I'm working retail, but still trying to write and, you know, do stand up and get better at that, except that I want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't have kids. I don't have to work and put food on the table. Like, if I wanted to, I could cease to exist tomorrow. Like, truly, right?
Right.
Like, things in life, people having a kid or family give you responsibilities, or I guess being the CEO of some big thing, but I'm not that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you just create your own reasons.
I'm not, and I think what you mean by being gone tomorrow, the way I took it was, like, I agree with people who want to commit suicide. If you can't hack it, then you should be able to bail out if you don't want to.
I think so,
But I wouldn't be able to do it because, realistically, what do you got, 70, 80 years on this planet? You can grit through, you know, that time.
That sounds terrible, grit through it.
It does, but I mean, at the same time, like, I feel like even though life is not that special, life happens all the time, it's pretty cool that I'm able to rationalize that you're here,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking to each other, and that's kind of a special thing, I think, because it would be much easier for that not to happen, for nothing to happen. So while I don't put a high value on it, I still think it's cool. So at the very least, I want to take part in that while I can, because eventually I won't be able to anymore.
But do you know that? What if there's another life and you do come back and you do this over again and you just forgotten it?
Then I won't know the better. So I will, my logic still makes sense to me at that point, because I won't know. Because there could be some cool things that happen afterwards, but then you'll get there in 80 years.
What's your next big bucket list thing you want to do?
Mm.
that you would share?
What I want to do. Yeah, I have a few of those. I don't know. I mean, there's stuff that I want to do, but I guess I'd like to travel more. That would be on my list. I really haven't been to too many places. And I know that people do that on a limited budget, too. So money is not an excuse. If I socked aside my open mic money for a year, I could probably go on a nice trip somewhere.
Everyone always says Southeast Asia, right? It's like the easiest, least expensive way to travel the most.
Yeah, you got to look where the economies are terrible.
For sure.
I want to go to Iceland.
That's where I want to go.
Yeah, it's beautiful,
right?
That's the next place I want to go.
Yeah.
I've seen all the videos on YouTube and everything, and it looks like a really neat, really neat place.
So magical. I mean, I know that's such an outsider thing to say, but I guess what draws me is maybe the fairy tale based music, the culture, and just the extremities of the landscape and everything that I've seen that comes out of it, and the people, just how they seem to face life in general. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Natasha Sam Rainey is sitting next to me. She's a writer and comedian. Do you go by comedian or comedian?
I go by whichever one you can pronounce.
I like to say comedian.
Sounds more French. I think people have fun saying that, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. I had a friend that went to Iceland, and she loved it. It was great. But there was a deal that she went during the wintertime because it was cheaper, obviously much cheaper. So she didn't really get to do too much because it was just miserable. But she said also the food was really funky.
I don't even know what they eat.
I think they eat whales and stuff. Like fermented and lye and stuff.
They eat fermented whales?
Yeah.
Will, please write a travel blog and just like review countries in three sentences.
They eat whales soaked in poison. It's gross. Yeah, so she went, but she said it was really cool, but she just, you'd have to go in the summer.
Yeah.
And I saw that they're doing flights, I think, Reykjavik, is that the capital?
I can never say Reykjavik.
To New York for $100.
What?
And
in the winter?
Tampa to New York is a couple $100, you know, round
trip. Reykjavik to New York or New York to Reykjavik?
I think they're $99 each.
I have to do more research and get back to you.
I
wonder how long their tourist visa is. Maybe you could just get dumped off in the winter when it's cheap and then just stay until there's actually sun.
Ooh, I was just thinking just go when it's sunny. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Are those seasonal? Because 100 is pretty good.
I think it's a year-round thing. You might have to book in advance. Probably you do, I'm sure. But there was things that I saw from Miami to London, too, for $200.
When do people see these? I never see that stuff.
I just see it on my Facebook timeline. Usually somebody will post something.
The news source of the world. Yeah. I was so excited because I got a $70 trip one way to Chicago. I'm going up in 4 weeks, five weeks, for casting of the first full-length play I'm co-writing. So I'm really excited.
Really?
Yes.
Tell me about that. What's up with
it's
that?
It's this playwright residency. It's actually based in a place called Waukegan, right outside of Chicago. And my friend, one of my writing partners, won it last year. So he reapplied this year, but he wanted to apply with me because we've written some before. And so we are just starting the second act of this play. And it is intense. We are emailing scenes back and forth and talking till 1 a.m. And like, I have those days where I wake up and it's like, I have to write. And you're there 5 hours telling yourself why you can't write and drinking coffee and writing notes and doing Facebook. And then by 7 o'clock at night, you're finally like disheveled and wide eyed and like bloodshot eyes and just like, okay, I'm writing. And then you stay up till 1 and then you fall asleep and you're like, I sent it to him. You know, it takes so long just to do those like few hours of actual work.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You get to when you want. It just doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. Creativity, I found, just doesn't flow like that. It just happens. You just really get a bug in your rear end, and it comes out. But if I sit and try to do something, generally it's not any good. Or you have to get into a zone. You got to have those vibes. You know that.
Yeah.
Those vibes. So tell me about the play though. Like, can you give me a synopsis kind of thing?
To be honest, so it goes on in August. It's called WTF Festival. It's actually, but we're part of, I think, 8 playwrights who are will be premiering their plays there, and ours goes the first week of August. So anyways, at this point, the play is about two people that, you know, unexpectedly cross paths and affect each other's lives in ways that they would never expect. They come from two different worlds. One is a young sort of drifter in his early 20s in the big city, and the other is a woman who has been married and is coming back to this city that was once her home, and she's middle-aged. And so the relationship ended unexpectedly, and she's sort of crashing and burning from that and coming back to the city, and they become roommates just by chance of need. And yeah, I guess that's all I, you know, things happen, and they end up affecting each other in ways that you can anticipate.
So this is still in process. It's not finished.
Yeah,
yet, so
that's
there
the
is
crazy
no
exciting part.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't, I mean, we have a sense of how it's going to end, but we have to like write that last sort of bit.
Got to stitch it all together. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fun. And it, like writing with someone, like I've written one acts with him before, which are really short plays, like 10 minute plays, but writing with someone that you're good friends with and everything, like you see the good and bad and ugly in each other. But honestly, like I think that was the first few weeks. You know, you try and figure out how the other person is thinking, and you become like a psychoanalyst, right? Like, well, why did you write this? Yeah. Well, that doesn't speak to it. Well, what did you mean by this word? And in your mind, when you're the writer, you can see it, but the challenge is always trying to express it in a way that another human can accept and absorb.
So yeah. You do that. Do you pick yourself apart when you're writing stuff down?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as a writer, sometimes you're your biggest critic. Every time I send him the email, my scene, I'm just like, okay, this is what I tried. I know it probably needs a lot of fixes. And I know this, like, you already go down self-deprecating. Like, I know. And, like, cringing at the thought that he's going to open it and hate it. But
oh, see, maybe. Well, I've tried to write with a partner. But most of the writing that I've done, I've tried to put together, like, because I want to do, like, video stuff. Yeah. Like, I want to do short, like 10 minute, you know, maybe tops, like scenes, and maybe eventually you'd stitch those together.
Like art, more artistic, like video sketches or narratives or?
Yeah, like a narrative, like a story, mm-hmm. a short. And it was mostly things that have happened to me, you know, in my life, but exaggerated tenfold.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And it's, I'll show it to you. I got them around here somewhere, but it was like, you know, just silly stuff, but I've never like picked those apart as in when I was writing those. I always kind of just I wanted to get it out.
Yeah.
Like I had it in my head, so I had to get it on paper. So I don't know if that's just a difference in the style that we do, or if that's I don't know.
It might be, or it might be just like a, you know, a difference in what part of the journey you're on. Like I know for me, my challenge as a writer had to be, and it took years to get this way, to like force myself to learn to free write. And people take that to mean different things, but like to free write and to not edit as I go. So like you said, you can just get it out.
Yeah.
But then challenge yourself and allow yourself the time and the space to reform those words and to edit afterwards. You know, because sometimes you put crap on the paper and 90% of it is exactly that crap, but you're never going to know until you put it down.
Yeah, I guess I was like, I'll edit later.
Yeah.
Is my mentality, rather than edit, you know, at the time.
I think that's way better.
Yeah. Because at least you have having more to work with is better than having, you know, bullet points or whatever of things that you were going to say, but, oh, I'm afraid to say that or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. Is this like, you said you haven't, you wrote one act, but this is like, is this your first play?
This is the first full-length play I've ever written.
And how, I don't even know, how long is a play?
Yeah, I don't know if there's like a necessary minimum or maximum, but right now it looks like we're going to be at about 90 minutes in two acts. So like, you know, 45 minutes or so intermission.
Yeah.
Second act. I mean, an act.
That's a big, that's a lot of
it's
writing.
It's a lot of pages. I think we're at 40 or 50 pages now, and we're shooting for about 90. I mean, when you talk about performances and how long they are, my sister's a vocalist. She's like classical singer, and opera can go on for 4 or 5 hours, right? Her teacher.
You can't. Holy moly.
And you don't understand a word they're saying, and everyone's dying and it's chaos. Her teacher, I think, is Korean. And she said, like, she's also an opera singer, obviously. And she said, like, in Korea, the operas can go on for like hours, like seven or more. Like, it's a whole day thing.
Oh my god, that sounds that just sounds awful to me.
See, I feel like you would need beer at something like that.
Yeah, or what like, about sure. like it goes straight too, no intermissions. No
I don't
breaks?
Know if it's like all in and out, like you take guests and you're visiting, and like you take a siesta. I have no idea. It sounds like a lot could happen. Very dramatic.
Yeah, that's just, I don't know. That doesn't sound appealing. Natasha Sambrani is sitting next to me if you're just joining us. She's a comedian and playwright and writer in general. So you've been working on the play. Has that kind of been your main focus? Are you trying to do, I know you're doing stand-up, obviously, too, because you came and hung out with me and stuff, but...
Yeah, that's what, sorry. I keep looking at your art. It's so beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
I want to hear the your story at least behind one of these. Seriously.
Okay.
I don't know if artists like the word beautiful for their work, but
yeah, I'll accept that.
So good. That one looks like Pac-Man. Like just rode through a bunch of little alleyways and pooped neon. It's beautiful.
That was my inspiration. That was exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Pac-Man takes ecstasy and acid at the same time, and that's what happened.
Did he drink one of those glow sticks?
Yes.
And he kept going.
Yep, he sure did. He shoved it in other crevices, too. And
that
it
actually does. That looks like the president's on ecstasy or something. They look like old white men who took
I'll
a trip.
You, I can tell you right now, since I know people at home can't see it,
yeah,
but
right.
It is a piece I did called Depression Era Gangsters.
Nice.
And it is it's based off Mount Rushmore. So
yes.
There you go, and it's kind of an ode to those are the real gangsters. Like I'm fascinated by those people. Yeah,
what is it about them?
I don't know. It's just I guess I was watching a lot of Boardwalk Empire maybe at the time, and that's obviously character portrayals of these guys.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They were just like the real. You look at gangs now, and they're kind of like. They were just classy, man. It just seemed like they were murderous, killers.
They were monsters, yeah.
Cold-blooded killers, too, don't get me wrong. But they just had this class about them. I don't know.
Was it because they dressed well and did everything under the table?
Yeah. I love seeing the guys in, old suits with a Tommy gun. That's just so cool. There's something about that.
That does it for you, Will.
Yeah.
Tommy
yeah.
gun in a suit.
That's all it takes. So, yeah, that was kind of the inspiration of that. But,
I can see it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I haven't done any art in since I've been here at this new place. I've been so busy with the radio shows and the setting up events and the comedy stuff that I tried to sit down. I had a piece that I started over there before I left, and I worked on it a little bit last week. I'm just stuck. I feel like I'm at like a lull as far as the visual art goes.
Well, how do you get yourself going when that happens?
I don't know.
Have to happen?
I don't know. And I mean, I know that I can do it. Mm-hmm. I guess I think what it is for me is that these other things are more important mm-hmm. to me. So I'm putting my time of what I'm having the best time doing and what I think is more lucrative. Because I have also, I got all this stuff that I don't know what to do with. And now it's just taking up space. And I'm wanting to get rid of stuff. Uh-huh. So it's like I have all these.
You have a garage sale or something?
Huh?
You should have a garage sale.
I should, yeah. But, I mean, it's more just like, paintings and stuff that I'm stuck with that didn't sell or, whatever. But I haven't even tried to get into a show or anything.
Yeah.
My goal is this year I'd like to have I have a friend, Corey Allen, who owns mm-hmm. a gallery.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, just whenever you want, we'll just do a show. So do an opening, and I might retire after that. I'll tell you what, that's my bucket list thing.
To do a show.
To do an art show this year.
Is this like a temporary retirement or is this artistic retirement?
I don't
like
know. No, I think I'd still do stuff, but like I was taking it really seriously for a while and trying to work,
You're going to do the gymnast retirement or the figure skater retirement and then come back in another 2 years.
Yeah, I was thinking more pro wrestler. But,
or pro wrestler, too, I guess. Baseball, yeah. Michael Jordan.
right. So, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe just not do stuff for show. I'm sure I'll always have it in me to do stuff every now and then, but I actually helped my friend Julie. She did this Blue Lucy show a couple weeks ago, and it was a garden party theme. So she had to do something with gardens. So
like
she
artistic
does, yeah uh-huh. So she does graphic design, and she makes these really cool transfers.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll design a piece on the computer, print it out, and then transfers it to the wood, and then rubs the paper off, so it's like this you know, permanent thing there. So then I drew, she asked me if I wanted to help, so I was like, all right. So then I put this, I'll show it to you later.
Oh, but, I see it.
So we kind of mixed our two styles together, and that was cool. Like, that was the first time I actually did something in a long time, like, and actually finished it. And I was nervous, too, because I was a little intoxicated when I told her that I would help her. And then the next day, she's like, yeah, it's... I was like, oh, damn it. I forgot about this. I said I would do this. And I was scared.
Were you hungover, or were you...
No, I was just... I was scared because I was like, I don't... I feel like I said, it's been so long that I'm afraid... If you don't use it, you lose it.
I think so, yeah.
And that is true to a certain extent. And also, I just didn't want to screw her work up. Like, you know, if I messed it up, you know, that'd be terrible. I'd feel terrible. But she trusted in me for whatever reason, and it turned out pretty nice.
You have, like, Instagram pictures of it?
Yeah.
Are you gonna share it?
Yeah, I'll show it to you for sure.
That's it. I love that.
Yeah, definitely. So you've been doing... I mean, I guess the play has probably been taking up most of your time.
The play's been the main one, and then I'm part of an ensemble troupe with Florida Studio Theater down in Sarasota. So we have a weekly show at the theater.
What is it called? Florida Studio?
Florida Studio Theater. They have an improv group there, and recently they got a new director, Will Luera, who's great. He moved down from Boston, and he directed Boston Improv, or Improv Boston, up there. And but anyway, so it's been cool to sort of join them, because it's a cast of several people that have been doing improv for years, and some of them have been, you know, improvising together for years. And so I feel like I'm definitely the newbie in this group, so it's like you're joining a new group of friends. But it's been really fun because we've been able to experiment with different styles and put on this show for, like, a very supportive audience. Because there's not a lot of places that do improv, like in Sarasota. You have to drive all around the Bay Area, and there's a few consistent groups.
Yeah, I think that's more Tampa. Seems like there's a lot. I went to a thing, I don't know, last month or a month and a half ago. It was at somewhere in Ybor, and they had, like, 4 or 5 improv groups, and they like this show. I can't remember where it was at, but I was like, dang, I didn't know there's this many improv groups around here.
And that's like the challenge down here. I feel like moving from Chicago there, or at least to the comedians that are in the network, like, everyone knows everything that's going on. Once you pull in civilians or, like, audience members that aren't in the comedy scene, it's harder to reach out to them. But here I feel like there are things happening, but they're so nested and, like, if you've never been to a comedy show down here, like, you wouldn't even know the first place of where to look or start.
Yeah, and that's
not consistent.
Right, and that's what I'm finding, because I'm trying to pretty active, you know, in the comedy scene down here. There's a lot that I don't know about that I find out every day. It's weird. Like, everyone kind of floats around. You know, there are some there are some groups, right? Like cliques, you know. I mean, it seems like the comics don't care. As long as they have a stage, they'll be there for the most part. But there's a lot of the organizers. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I know of a lot of organizers and stuff like that. But I'm like, I've never seen this person or met this person. And I'm like, I thought I knew a lot. You know, everybody, you know, is from doing my stuff.
And then they just come out of a cave. Or to you, they do.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a disconnect between, like, comics or comedians, producers that are at one level, like, quote unquote, starting out or newer, and then the ones that are touring even clubs in Florida, and like the middle ground, like the middle class of comedians or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's no connection from one end to the other. Like, where are they? Who are they? How are they practicing their craft? You know, how do you, because I think the big part about being a comedian too is, like, not only to go to mics and network, but, like, to see good shows. And unless you're going to a club or, like, a show that you put on that you independently produced, you can't find those.
Yeah.
And that's necessary for, like, performers to develop their craft, is to see how they can do that.
And that was, you know, the motivation behind doing We're Still Here, was that was the basis. And it was kind of to tell the media, like, hey, because people are lazy. They, like you said, they don't look for new things to do. They needs to be somewhere they can see it, not on page last of Creative Loafing. So it would be nice if they would do, like, because there's a lot happening here. Like I said, there's improv. There's so many things. And if they would just show people, people might start coming. And then we can build, we can fill in these gaps that are that are here, that are, and are hurting, hurting the scene, because there's a lot of people that don't know about each other, and they should. So far, Creative Loafing has done nothing.
Have they responded since
nothing.
The show?
No, nothing.
And you made, like, some good connections and stuff, and, like, I guess had some good media moments with a couple other outlets.
Yeah, I mean, The Bone was really good. Johnny B is a big supporter of comedy, and he's a comedian, too, so he's really good. He's probably the best with, like, and now he's on The Bone, so that's going to be a big help, I think, to comedy, stand-up anyways. You know, Fisher and Cage. Fisher's come on, done this show. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey, let me come to your show and promote the show. Sure. Yeah. So he brought me on. And then That's So Tampa did that article, which is, it's like I Love the Berg, but Tampa's version, pretty much.
Okay.
So it was really cool of them to do that. But other than that, I mean, I sent the press release out to every media outlet I could think of and tweeted. I'm a pest. And I mean, I know I'm a pest, but I feel like that's the only way things will happen. That's the only way you'll get done. I was talking to one of the other comedians about, like, he feels guilty telling people about his shows. I know. But see, he's like, I'm doing things four nights a week. So I feel bad. Hey, I'm doing this. And they're, you know, and I totally understand where he's coming from, because I feel guilty too.
Yeah.
Even sending things on Facebook, like inviting people to stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know of a way to not pester and still let people know. you know what I mean?
It's a challenge, I feel like, especially with social media, right? It's like there's so much, we don't want to be part of that, like, inundation of information. But at the same time, because there's so much, like, repetition is the only way, you know, consistency to get people to take notice. I had about, I think, 10 friends and coworkers come out to the show to Tampa, some from like as far south as Venice and from Tampa and stuff, and they, half of them have never seen a stand-up show at any level.
I know,
and that surprised me too. I was so glad to be part of that, but wow.
Yeah,
like, I want more comedy virgins. Where are they?
I know. I know. And the thing about it is because they don't know. They don't know it exists, and there is shows happening every day here.
Yeah.
There's either an open mic or an actual show happening somewhere.
Yeah.
There's one in Largo on Friday. It's got a good lineup. Who's on that? David Weingarten's on that. A couple of Cigar City people. I don't remember. But,
you know what we need? We need a sponsor to sponsor, like, a weekly shuttle for, like, these showcases to shuttle Tampa people all around the Bay Area mics. So, like, on Wednesdays, if there's three mics, but they're all spread out, well, like, you know, 12 people, everyone put in $5 and, like,
because
I feel that's part of it. Transportation. It's a long stretch between these mics and shows.
Yeah, I know. And, like, I would like to do my mic once a week.
Yeah.
I think that would be great. But the problems I see with that are being more of a pest, having a pester my friends to come out. And if you do it too much, you run the risk of losing your entire momentum, because people will just stop showing up, because it's once a week. So I'll just come out next week.
Just come next week.
I'm tired. I'll come out the next week. It's next week. So, I mean, having an open mic would be great for the comics and stuff like that to practice. Mm-hmm. But also the other problem I see with it is that I've seen, you know, I've been doing this mic about a year now, and I've seen same people roll through with the same 5 minutes they had when I first saw them. And that's really prevalent.
Yeah.
That I don't care. I mean, you do whatever you want, and it makes you happy, then do it. That's what the mic's there for. But the amount of people, I guess, taking it serious in the area is not as many as there should be, probably.
Well, and I definitely feel that's part of the challenge. Like, if honestly in the Tampa Bay area, you have the opportunity to do maybe max three mics a week, because a lot of these are bi-weekly or monthly mics, not even shows. Mm-hmm. If you only have the opportunity to do max three mics a week, like, you don't have, you know, you're going to be doing the same material for a while before you get it down or you feel comfortable with it or like you feel motivated to write anything new. And some of them see this as a mic is stage time, any stage time, right? And like, I wish there were more. There has to be more, but
I know, and that's I feel like there needs to be more open mics for people to work stuff out. It's the only way people get better is by doing it. But the other thing too is like you can't. It's not like a musician really can go play an open mic. They can play in their bedroom and get better.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't. It's a really a hard craft to really master, because I think once you get good enough, you have to go. You have to go to New York, or you have to go to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what you gotta do.
Go to Chicago
or Chicago too. Is Chicago more improv though, right?
Mm-mm, more stand up too.
Really?
I mean, well, I've never been to LA. I've been in New York. I've had friends that have gone all over. I really feel like it has to do with like where you are career wise and what you're developing. I think in terms of stand up, like from what I've heard, to practice your craft and to be able to do it, you know, every night a week and to see people at different levels and to really develop as an artist and writer, like Chicago and New York are like places for that. From what I've heard, you know, once you want to actually start making money consistently of it and maybe get an agent, then New York or LA is more.
Yeah.
You know, out of Chicago though, you can do more, you have more of the opportunity, like where you can go around Midwest or even nationwide touring.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Tampa Bay area is in a weird spot. It's kind of stuck at the bottom. There's really nowhere to get out. I mean, there's Orlando, there's Miami, go up to Gainesville.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of emptiness, you know, in between those spots. So it's a weird spot. We have a dense population here. So I feel like that's good. I mean, it's one of the top 15, I think, in the nation as far as population and
but it's a metro
goes.
Area. Which,
yeah.
Like you said,
and it's growing too. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to, I just feel like, I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to do what I can, but also I still feel like just it's not going to become like a Mecca or anything like that. People are still going to leave and go to, you know, New York or LA. That's the goal. And that's the people that I've talked to that actually do take it seriously. That's their plan eventually is to move on. And but that's okay, you know. That's I guess that's just the way it is everywhere.
Every place is its own thing.
Yeah.
I think it says a lot tougher. I grew up some in Tampa, but moving back down here, what I didn't realize is that there are a lot of opportunities to develop in theater. And so, like, not just community theater, but, like, Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, I realized they even cast out of New York. It's professional theater. They bring some big shows through, and you have a pretty loyal audience. And then there's some really good theaters in Tampa, but it's still going to be like mid-level for the most. But there's some good opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, but that's okay. You know, maybe this will be like a double A. You know, baseball terminology, a double A squad.
Throw it at
you know?
Me. Let's see. Yeah, sure.
So it's the majors, but you get put into you know the minor leagues.
That's
you know,
true.
And then you work your way up to the big time. So,
I think so
that's okay. I think too.
Yeah.
It's still frustrating for me sometimes because I want to see. I just wish there was more happening here that people were taking it seriously. But you know, I'll just do what I can. And
well, I think you're doing great. You have balls and like you push it and you create things and you make them happen. So, I mean, that's what you can do.
That's one thing else. You can say a lot about me, but I get things done. Yeah. So, and that's only because I got nothing else to lose. So, pretty much when you leave a push somebody into a corner, they got to fight their way out. So that's pretty much what happened with me. But yeah, we got to get going already again. You
cool.
believe that?
Yeah, I saw that look in your eyes.
It's getting to be that time.
It's
so
that time again.
Give out your social media stuff where people can find you.
Sure. I would love to. You can find me on Twitter at Natasha Samreny. That's at Natasha, Samreny. I'm on Facebook and then Natasha Samreny Writes. Tumblr.com.
That's it. What about the Florida?
Oh, Florida Studio Theater. Oh, yeah, thank you. And they just did a new site. Also at FloridaStudioTheater.com. Check out the improv. We have shows weekly. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, right on. Okay, and I want to give a shout out to Will. How do you say Will's last name?
Luera.
Is that it, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Anyways, he filmed the show for us. So
I was talking about my director. You're talking about Will Nivens.
Yes, that's the one. TallowCandleProductions.com. He filmed our event for us. Thank you, Will. That'll be up soon. You can see the We're Still Here show and all that. Facebook.com/The Homemade Broadcast. My Twitter is home_made_man. RadioSaintPete.com, Facebook.com/RadioSaintPete. I'll talk to you people next week. See ya.